Hi, I'm Mary Jane Minkin. I'm an obstetrician gynecologist, and I take care of patients in New Haven, Connecticut. I also teach medical students, residents, and fellows at Yale Medical School, and I teach undergrads and docs too. Basically, anyone who will listen to me. I have a website called madamovary.com, and I would encourage you all to take a look at it. You might want to start by watching the basic menopause videos. And I am hoping to take you on a brief tour of menopause and help you to be as healthy and happy as you can. I would also encourage men to listen to these podcasts too. There is a lot of information here which might be interesting and helpful to them. We want all people to understand women's bodies and what we are going through. And I won't say problems, because to me, a problem is something we cannot help. And for just about everything we will be discussing, there are interventions to make it better. I'd like to spend a few minutes with you to talk about a therapy for menopause that's only been around for about 80 years. I hope I'll get you all familiar with the highlights. Let's talk about estrogen. When I talk with healthcare providers, I basically divide thinking about estrogen as menopausal therapy into two categories. What does it do for symptoms, like the fun hot flashes, insomnia, vaginal dryness, mood swings, cognitive changes, achiness, weight gain? Shall I continue? And also, what does it do for the health risks which increase after menopause, such as cardiovascular disease and osteoporosis, among others? And, as I always comment, to borrow a line you've all heard, I'll do my best to be fair and balanced. I did just list a few of the symptoms that menopausal women experience. The classic is hot flashes. Now, what's very interesting is that 20% of women going through menopause experience no hot flashes at all. 60% of us will get moderate hot flashes, will get hot and sweaty, but can continue to do what we were doing, and 20% get so uncomfortable that they have to stop dead in their tracks as they are perspiring and feeling too miserable. The majority of women will also notice sleep disturbances. The classic is not having a problem going to sleep. My ladies are exhausted, come 9 or 10 at night, and they pass out. But at 1 or 2 in the morning, they'll wake up, oftentimes sweaty, and be wide awake. In an hour or two, they'll fall back to sleep, and then they'll wake up again at 4 a.m. Many of you know the drill. Also interesting about the hot flashes is that they will often start during the early part of the menopausal transition, when the periods are becoming erratic, and they usually tend to get better over the course of time. Now, of course, when you aren't sleeping and feeling well, do you feel a bit grouchy and does your brain function totally clearly? What I cannot tell you is, do those feelings occur just because you were tired, or is there a separate dysfunction which comes from the loss of estrogen itself? But lots of women are sharing these symptoms with you. And although women can experience vaginal dryness and bladder issues right at the beginning of the transition period into menopause, the dryness tends to come later on, sometimes so much so that women have trouble recognizing it as a menopausal symptom. Several symptoms are often more insidious. Many women will complain of achiness, which, by the way, is not related to bone loss. This is a musculoskeletal achiness that will chase several of my patients every year to see an arthritis doctor who checks them out and doesn't find rheumatoid arthritis or lupus, even though she is carefully looking. And the reason we think it can just be related to menopause is that if you put these women on estrogen, they feel so much better very quickly. And many women complain about weight gain, and even if they don't gain weight, they feel that they are redistributing it in the middle. I refer to this as centripetal distribution. Now, don't get me wrong. If someone tells me she has gained 40 pounds from menopause, I can assure her that menopause is not the culprit. But a 5 to 8 pound gain as she goes through the transition is pretty common. Now, that doesn't mean she cannot lose it. It's just a bit more difficult. And that's part of why I am such a nut on emphasizing good nutrition and a lot of exercise. But as they say on TV, wait, there's more. Because even if you feel absolutely fine with no symptoms whatsoever, I always discuss a couple of organ systems with my patient. Estrogen is a well-known protector of bone health. Many women think of bones as inert. they have bones which form and just stay the same. That doesn't happen. Bones are a dynamic system, always breaking down and rebuilding. The process is often referred to as remodeling. Estrogen is well known for slowing down the breakdown of bones, so that when you lose estrogen, you will break down bones faster. You will keep rebuilding them too, but if you're breaking them down faster than you're rebuilding, you will lose bone. And if you give a woman estrogen therapy, she will slow her breakdown and end up with better bones. Heart health is a bit trickier to understand. Estrogen does a few things. For one thing, it improves what we call the lipid profile, or what some folks refer to as their cholesterol levels. So after menopause, women's good cholesterol, or HDL, tends to go down. The bad cholesterol, LDL, goes up, as do the triglycerides. However, we also know that estrogen has a significant effect on blood vessels themselves, causing the blood vessels bringing blood to different parts of the body, which are called the arteries and arterioles, to relax or dilate, which allows them to carry more good blood rich with oxygen to tissues. So when you lose estrogen, the cardiovascular system doesn't work quite as well. And we do see an increased risk of what we call cardiovascular disease. And indeed, it was estrogen's effect on heart disease that prompted the study which led to the significant decline in estrogen use in this country. In the 1980s, it was noted in several studies that women who took estrogen as they went through menopause ended up with much less heart disease than women who didn't take estrogen. So many people started to ask, gee, should we be prescribing estrogen for the prevention of heart disease? Before the FDA would issue such an indication, it was decided to do what we call a prospective, randomized, double-blind study of menopausal women, giving some estrogen and some placebo to see if we would see less heart disease in the estrogen users. However, whereas the observational studies were looking at women who started estrogen therapy right around the time the women were going through menopause, the National Institutes of Health study, as their protocol, studied women primarily well past menopause. The observational trials were looking at women who were about 50 or so when they started estrogen therapy. The average age in the NIH study, which was called the Women's Health Initiative, was 63. And indeed, 20% of the 27,000 plus women who were enrolled were between the ages of 70 and 79. The WHI study had two arms. Women who take estrogen and have a uterus need to take another hormone called progesterone, or a synthetic progesterone called a progestin, and that's to protect the lining of the uterus, because estrogen causes growth of the lining of the uterus, which the progesterone prevents. However, if you have had a hysterectomy and you don't have a lining of the uterus to protect, you need only to take estrogen. And researchers already knew that progestins can undo some of the good that estrogen does for your heart. However, the study team also wanted to see if anything bad would come out of the study. And indeed, after a bit over 5 years of the study, they saw in the group of women who had a uterus who were taking the estrogen plus a progestin that they had a very slight increased risk of breast cancer. The number was very small. Basically, after over 5 years of therapy, the increased risk was 8 per 10,000 women per year. But that was enough to scare most every woman in the United States. It also did not show the significant reduction in heart disease that was anticipated. Thus, the study was stopped early. Now, interestingly enough, the estrogen-only group, that is the group of women who were just taking estrogen alone as they had had a hysterectomy, never showed any increased risk of breast cancer, and indeed, they actually showed a slight decreased risk of breast cancer. And why did they not show the significant protection against cardiovascular disease in either group? Most experts think the explanation lies in the fact that the women who were taking estrogen in the observational studies were started on it as they developed symptoms, not 10 to 20 years after they had lost their estrogen. Many believe that to be effective in preventing heart disease, you need to start the therapy reasonably close to the loss of the estrogen, not 10 or 20 years later. This explanation uses the concept of what we call gap time, or for a window to initiate therapy. Now, there is one group of women who we do push to take estrogen therapy, namely women who undergo menopause at a very young age. Indeed, about 1% of women will go through menopause by age 40, with 5% of women becoming menopausal by age 45. These very young women have a huge risk of heart disease and bone loss, and if they get hormonal therapy, their risk normalizes to that of the regular population. However, despite the fact that 40% of us die from heart disease and 3-4% of us will die from breast cancer, American women are far more terrified of breast cancer. And despite the fact that estrogen alone therapy never showed any increased risk of breast cancer, the total use of estrogen for all women in the United States plummeted in the year 2002 and has stayed down ever since. The WHI study evaluated only one form of estrogen and only one form of progestin, but many forms of both exist. But American women were told to assume that all forms of estrogen and all forms of progestin were the same for risks and benefits. For example, we know from some observational European studies that micronized natural progesterone seems to carry no significant breast hazard. Women on estrogen plus natural progesterone seem to do as well as women on estrogen alone therapy as far as breast health, but that's not discussed. And what is most telling is that many studies have been done which confirm that estrogen therapy alone for women who have had a hysterectomy has no significant breast hazard. Yet so many women who have had a hysterectomy and then subsequently go through menopause are allowed to suffer, and they will state that they are worried about their breasts. No one has explained to them that estrogen alone therapy is really quite safe for the breasts. So let's fix this. Of course, there is one trick in evaluating women who've had a hysterectomy and have had their ovaries left in place. They will go through menopause, and they usually do go through menopause a bit earlier than women who haven't had a hysterectomy. They tend to undergo menopause 1 to 2 years earlier, probably because of changes in pelvic blood flow at the time of the hysterectomy. But we cannot tell these women who have had a hysterectomy exactly when they are fully menopausal. We usually tell women that they are fully menopausal when they've gone a full year without a period, but we can't do that if they've had a hysterectomy. We can measure blood hormone levels, but many practitioners will base their prescription for estrogen therapy based on age and symptoms. So for women who have had a hysterectomy, we are talking about prescribing estrogen alone therapy. For women with a uterus, we need to talk about estrogen and progesterone. Estrogens come in several varieties. There are two basic types of estrogen available. One is estradiol, which is indeed exactly the same as the most active estrogen made by our ovaries, when they're working, of course. Systemic estradiol, that is, estrogen which will give you a significant blood level when taken, comes in pill forms or patches, vaginal rings, gels, and sprays. There is also a form of estrogen called conjugated estrogens, which is a mixture of several different types of estrogen. That form is available in pills only for systemic levels. Many women and physicians are confused about terminology. They hear about bioidentical estrogens, but they aren't sure what the word means. Unfortunately, bioidentical is not a medical term. Most providers take it to mean estradiol. Most women equate bioidentical with plant-derived. Indeed, all estradiol is plant-derived. The base is soy or yams, and it's processed in a laboratory. All of the transdermal preparations, like the patches, are bioidentical. Many women think that to get bioidentical hormones, you need to get them from a compounding pharmacy. But you can get FDA-approved bioidentical estradiol pills, patches, gels, and sprays from your corner pharmacy. Many practitioners are concerned that the products from compounding pharmacies may have contaminants and that they also may not contain the dose that's stated on the label. The majority of the choice in product is your choice. Some women really prefer a pill, and some women prefer a patch or a gel. Pills and gels you take every day. Patches you change once or twice a week. There is a very slight increased risk in blood clots associated with most oral preparations, whereas the transdermal route does not seem to increase the risk of blood clots. There is more of an issue in choosing the uterine protector if you've not had a hysterectomy. When we started using progestins to protect the lining of the uterus back in the 1980s, we basically tried to mimic the hormones of the normal menstrual cycle. When our ovaries are working, we make estrogen almost all the time, but we only make progesterone for about 12 days a month. So we figured if we gave women progestins for 12 days a month, well, guess what we also gave them? A period. And getting rid of the period is generally the most welcome part of menopause for most, but not all women. Researchers then tried to give women a smaller amount of progestins on a daily basis. And then they did achieve their goal, protection without a period. With daily progestin therapy, some women will get some spotting, but they seldom get full periods. The major question is what progestin to use. There are many out there. I won't go into all the details here, but I will say that many of the synthetic progestins do have some side effects like moodiness and breast soreness. The hormone natural progesterone has the protective properties of the synthetics, but it has much less in the line of side effects. And as I commented above, natural progesterone does seem to be safer for the breasts. Now, we do have a couple of other options in lieu of progesterone or progestin pills. One medication called basodoxifene is something called a SERM, S-E-R-M, or Selective Estrogen Receptor Modulator. It is a cousin of the medication tamoxifen. It actually blocks the action of estrogen on many organ systems, and it blocks the action of estrogen at the breast. But basodoxifene also blocks estrogen activity on the lining of the uterus. So, combined with estrogen, it helps protect you from hot flashes, but it also keeps estrogen from stimulating breast tissue and uterine tissue. Not bad. Another option to deliver progestin to the lining of the uterus is through an IUD such as the Mirena, which is coated with progestin. So a woman who has a Mirena IUD can safely take estrogen and does not need extra progesterone. This works really well for women who are going through the perimenopausal transition because they can still get pregnant. So the IUD removes that worry. A few other points to note when taking systemic estrogen therapy. The estrogen from the pills or patches travels all over the body, including the vagina. So if you are suffering from hot flashes and have vaginal dryness, the estrogen pills or patches should help the vagina too. For most women, it does lead to a comfortable moisture level. However, about 20% of women will still need to add some vaginal estrogens to take care of their dryness. When can you start estrogen if you are experiencing hot flashes and still getting your period? That is, you are perimenopausal. You can start while you are still perimenopausal. The only problem is that if you start estrogen while you are still perimenopausal, you will be getting supplemental estrogen every day. And remember, in perimenopause, some days your ovaries will not be doing much in the line of anything, but occasionally they'll be doing double duty work. So on those days, you'll be getting a lot of estrogen. So what does that do? You may get sore breasts, whereas the day before that, you might have been experiencing hot flashes. Estrogen doesn't shut down your ovaries. It just gives you some extra estrogen. So what if you were now to take a low-dose birth control pill? Birth control pills work by shutting down your ovaries, so they are now out of the picture. And the pill will give you a constant amount of estrogen daily. And the pills also have progestin every day too, protecting the lining of the uterus. So this sounds pretty good. And when you go off the pill for those 4 days or 7 days, you'll probably get a very light period. Well, that's good, as the pill probably has more progesterone than your body has been making. And you won't get pregnant, which, as we talked about, can happen. So the pill sounds pretty good to a lot of women. The one bad thing about the pill, you won't be able to, while you are taking the pill, find out if you've gone through menopause. But do you care? So you actually have to stop the pill for a few weeks before you get a blood test to see if you are fully menopausal. Now, of course, the pill isn't for everyone. If you smoke or have uncontrolled high blood pressure or are very heavy, you should not take hormonal contraception. However, If you have very heavy periods, a progestin-coated IUD such as the Mirena might be a fine option. The progestin is delivered directly to the lining of the uterus and doesn't affect anything else. Now, how long should you stay on estrogen? I don't know, nor does anybody else for that matter. For most women, hot flashes do get better over the course of time. Alas, for about 10% of women, they will persist for 10 years or more. But even there, they do tend to get better. So what most of my menopause expert friends recommend is at some point to try to taper off the dose of estrogen very gradually and see what happens. Interestingly, there is no scientific data to show that tapering off ends up giving you less hot flashes, as opposed to the so-called cold turkey approach. But often we'll find a dose at which the woman will start to experience hot flashes. So we'll go back up to that level to see if we can get rid of her annoyances. And please, one simple recommendation. Please don't wean off of estrogen in July or August. That is if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. Hot flashes do tend to be worse in the summer. For most of our observational studies, the good that estrogen does for the bones and the heart persists as long as we stay on the medication. As I mentioned earlier, the hot flash symptoms do tend to improve over the course of time, whereas vaginal dryness does not. So if after going off of estrogen therapy, you develop vaginal dryness, you can then start using a vaginal estrogen preparation. So some of these observations and suggestions may sound a bit confusing, and I am going to ask you to speak with your provider. And remember, you can always find the local menopause practitioner by going to menopause.org and providing your zip code. So please, no suffering. We'll talk again soon.